So yesterday, I started into our theme of spiritual death. And although I was talking about how spiritual death can, as a term, can be a difficult one, or can produce difficult responses in you, it's also a good one because it kind of underlines the fact that we're aiming to bring about quite a radical transformation in how our minds function through insight practice. A real transformation. And yesterday I also said that the insight work benefits from and needs balancing by work with shamatha. Letting mind rest, letting it open, letting it absorb. And also through shamatha, building up what Bhante calls a reservoir of positive emotion, which again is really crucial for the insight work to go well. The more positive emotion there is, the easier it will be to see into the nature of things, and the easier it will be, the smoother it will be to absorb that new seeing, that new knowing. Oh, and I also mentioned that the insight that I'm talking about this week is, what could you call it, sort of existential insight. It's not simply a psychological or an emotional insight and seeing, valuable as those are. I think most of us need to kind of work on both levels. We need to keep understanding our own psychology, our own conditioning, working with what comes up in relation to all that. Understanding this strange and wonderful being that we are on that level. But we also need to work on the deepest of levels. We need to work on the level of what's fundamentally true. I often say that Buddhism, although it makes some very fine distinctions, tends to focus on what's common. So when you focus on what's common with human beings, you start to see that we're all trying to be happy in our different ways and often not managing to do it. We're all subject to old age, sickness and death, and so on. So seeing what's common to human beings tends to produce compassion. But then if we look at not just what's common to all beings, but what's common to all experience, then we move into the realm of wisdom, of insight. We start seeing that everything is flowing, that experience is always continuing, it's constantly transforming. We see that there's nothing about it that we can grasp onto that will stay, that's solid. We see that whatever it is, if we grasp onto it, it causes us suffering, and so on. So in looking at insight in this way, we're seeing what's common to all experience. So every moment, actually, we have another opportunity to do that, because what's common to all experience is common to this moment, and this moment, and this moment. Whether you like the moment or don't like it, it's like with meditation. You know, very often if you're practicing shamatha, you know, you don't want thoughts. You want to sort of get rid of all that thinking. But then there's a text by Gampopa, the disciple of Milarepa, who says, thoughts are really beneficial. Thoughts are your friends. Because every thought gives you another opportunity to see, well, what is a thought anyway? Well, it's just a flimsy, ungraspable, flowing, you can't say. Yeah. So from that point of view, they're really helpful things. So anyway, the point is that every moment experience has these common factors, which we can always be exploring, we can always be looking into whatever's going on. So that it's that level of seeing that we're exploring here together. And yesterday I started in looking at the six element practice, and we did a sort of preliminary move in that direction with that meditation, you know, sort of taking in the elements, and but not holding on to them, just letting them go, you know, with the five elements. And then we did that practice where we kind of did a six element practice, but with somebody else. And that just sort of popped up. I'm not quite sure why I did that. I think probably because sometimes it's easier to, you know, quite a lot of things are much easier to see with other people than they are with yourself, yeah? So you can see with somebody else that, okay, yes, their six elements all came from the world outside, and that holding on to them and being identified with them really does cause them suffering, and if they weren't doing that, they would be free of anxiety and free of fear and deeply relaxed and so on. Yeah, maybe it's easier to see with somebody else, but that's a good start. If we can see that clearly in relation to somebody else, then we can start to see it more clearly in relation to us. And it's a really, I think it is a crucial sort of building block of the practice. If we can see the dukkha in being identified, if we can see the dukkha of holding on, then we have the real motivation to do the practice. It's not actually that difficult to see these things. Yeah, I mean, you know, you could almost kind of like, you could teach the basis of this practice to a small child, you know. It's like, it's not that difficult, you know, you just sit them down, you know, kind of, okay, so, yeah, so where did all those solid bits in your body come from? From my mummy's tummy? Yes, but after that, you ate them, didn't you? You took them in, you know, all those sweets and things that you eat, you know, they became your knees and your elbow, didn't they? Yes. And you give them back, don't you? How do you give back those solid bits? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You do a poo, don't you? Yeah. So it's not that difficult. You know, we're not talking about rocket science to, you know, something which requires incredible, you know, intellectual understanding and a, you know, 6-year doctorate in it. It's, you know, it's all kind of staring us in the face. The thing is that we are kind of looking the other way as much as possible. But if we can really motivate ourselves that we really do want to see this, we really want to get this sorted out, thank you, because it's really causing us suffering, then it isn't actually too hard. Yeah. So to motivate ourselves, we need to be kind of pushed and pulled. Yeah. So you're kind of pushed away by seeing how, you know, clinging on to the body is, and the space and the consciousness is I, me and mine, is actually suffering. Yeah. If we really get that, you know, then that pushes us in the right direction. And it is, you know, it's like If I bite on something and lose a bit of tooth, if I'm identified with that tooth, then it's, I can think of times in the past where that's happened. And it's almost like I go through Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's sort of 5 stages of grieving, you know, sometimes in just a few minutes or in the course of a day or something. You know, a little bit of me has just gone. And it's not just about, oh, it's a nuisance, I've got to go to the dentist. It's a little bit deeper than that. You know, so I kind of don't want to believe it's happened. And then I think, oh, you know, rats, you know, how did I come to eat something that, you know, was there a bit of grit in that bread? And then, oh, it's, maybe it's not too bad. Maybe it's just a bit of filling. Oh, no, now it's a bit of tooth. And then I feel depressed. And then finally I get over it, you know. But all that happens just because I'm identified with this piece of enamel, yeah? And it's just the piece of enamel which kind of broke off from another bit of enamel. And so but I turn that into a cause of suffering because I think of it as me, yeah? Or at least mine. So that's just tiny. So all through our lives, in all kinds of ways, we are tormenting ourselves by being identified. And the Buddha and 2,500 years of realized beings are here to demonstrate and tell us that we could be far happier than that. We could be really free. So if we can see the pain in identification, and we can watch it through the day. You know, it's like if you want a mindfulness practice while you're here, one you could do would be just to watch how through the day you're sort of closing down and identifying and then opening up more. Yeah, you kind of go and look at Sangha Deva's garden and you just kind of open up, and then you think, oh but I'm late for lunch, and you close down. And you can feel it in the body very strongly, you can feel it in the emotions, you can feel more thoughts happening when you're identified, you get very identified, your mind just whirls, all that. And then the times when you're not, you know, barely identified at all, just open to what's this moment. It's relaxation, there's ease, creativity. So yeah. And then we can be drawn on by a sense of how it would be really not to be like that. To not be organising ourselves. Our mind's just kind of learnt to sort of pattern itself in a particular way, to interpret experience in terms of me at the centre of a world. So if we could let go of that, then there would be openness, spaciousness, freedom. But we wouldn't lose everything. We'd still be, you know, all our experience would still be there, would still be here, but it would be experienced in a different way. And if we look at those extremes in our own experience, the times where we are really kind of hunkered down around me and, oh my God, am I all right, and what will happen to me? And the times when we're really not, and we're just, you know, our hearts are really open and we're just here, present, alive, you know, in this experience. Yeah. So insight practice is just trying to get us to see all this so clearly that it becomes second nature to keep opening rather than what's currently sort of feels natural, to kind of close down and, you know, always in situations, always to check, first off, am I all right? Yeah. What about me? And we do look, we're still, you know, the needs of this organism still get met. You can conceptualize all this to yourself in terms of sort of kind of giving up in a way that means that you sort of go off somewhere else and your psychophysical organism is kind of abandoned and sort of doesn't get cared for, and that's not how it is. Yeah, so if we could really get ourselves motivated, if we could get really clear about ourselves in the same way as it's fairly easy to get clear about somebody else, then the practice could really go, could really fly. So, but then I come back to those 7 out of 8 order members on our retreat in Cambridge earlier in the year, where the practice didn't fly. So maybe it's just worth looking at some of the reasons why it might not take off. So one issue that people had was that the practice was too cognitive. As I said, like somebody said, basically just too many words. And certainly the practice is a practice of reflection. And 2 or 3 years ago, I was meeting with Bhante, and I was talking to him about this, and I was saying, well, you know, the six-element practice is really a series of reflections, isn't it? And he said, yes, it is. But it's a series of reflections which leads to an experience. So there's a whole lineage of practice within Buddhism which involves reflection to the point where there's a deeper opening, a deeper seeing, something, as it were, comes through based on what may start off as a reflective train of, well, hopefully more than thought, because with reflection you can reflect with all of you. In fact, we need to reflect with all of us. Reflection needn't just be, you know, a train of thinking, yeah? Although it may have that aspect to it. But reflection works best when all of us is involved. So our emotions are involved. Our imagination is involved. Our rational mind is involved, yep. Our body is involved. Yeah, it's like as you're really reflecting, there can be this sense of how does this sit with the body. It's like your body kind of responds, you know, if something's really true. It's almost like that kind of affects your energy. You can sort of feel it. There's a sort of felt sense of, yes, this is how things are. Or, oh, no, that's off somehow. That's not quite it. Yeah. And then there's a sort of intuitive faculty that's also there. So reflection isn't just, you know, sitting with the mind whirring. It's kind of all of you. And then I said to Bhante, well, what about direct experience? And he said, well, that's just another approach. So there are different ways that we can go with these things. And I think a few years ago I got really into direct experience approaches, and I got a bit sort of huffy about things like the six element practice. I went, well, you know, I look at my direct experience and can't find an earth element, can't find a world outside, can't find a me that's da da da. And that was a useful phase to go through. I was really sorting out my concepts from my direct experience, but it was also a bit one-sided. You know, often when we find something which really helps us for a while and we go really into a phase of it, we really run with it, it's good. But it's a bit difficult sometimes to appreciate other approaches when we're really in that. So yeah, there are different ways we can go, and one of them is to reflect, but to reflect with all of us. And we can also turn the six-element practice into something. Well, another of the things which people mentioned on that retreat was they got bored with it, they got sleepy, they were running out of steam. And I think there could be two reasons. Well, there probably could be several reasons for that. But when we're practicing, we need to be able to distinguish, certainly with insight practice, there are times where there's resistance to seeing. There's times where, I don't know, ignorance is like, well, it's not ignorance, ignorance is ignoring. It's almost, it's a sort of force, almost. So there are times where it's as if we're trying to see, but it's like mind just kind of, suddenly, there you are, you sit down, you were full of energy and you sit down to do the practice and suddenly you've just gone. It's like, so you need to be able to distinguish between the reactions which mind is throwing up in relation to the practice, boredom or frustration, oh, this is stupid, all that kind of response, and times where actually you're just asking your mind to be too active. Yeah. Mind really likes time to rest. It likes to really relax. And if we don't give it any of that time, then it starts to sort of play up and cut out and cause difficulty. And sometimes the six-element practice can be taught taught and then practiced in a way which turns it into a bit of a rigmarole. Turns it into a bit of a tedious and long-winded procedure. somebody did tell me that they had been taught the six-element practice, and it was broken down into a whole series of reflections. The number I have in my head that I remember is 84. That may or may not be right, but it was an awful lot. It's like you could take, the earth element, and there's the earth element in the body, da da da, and there's the earth element out there, and then that's, and you take things in, and you give it back, and death, so on and so forth. So it's like there was a whole detailed list of things. And for some people, that'd be fantastic. There would be one or two people, friends of mine I can think of, who would really get off on doing it like that. But for a lot of us, you go through the practice several times, you start to get to really know it, and there comes a point where you need to really kind of make it your own. And after a while, you are kind of convinced, you've got the basic idea. So it's almost like your mind sort of, you get to the start and right, oh gosh, you want me to go through this thing and right, this in the body and it's outside and I take it in and I give it out and then I die. And we've done that for the earth element. Oh right, now you want to go through all that again for the water element and for the fire element and for the air element. And something you just sort of goes, oh. And if you don't catch that, if you feel that that's how I do the practice and that's how I'm supposed to do it, you just keep doing this thing which is your mind isn't staying fresh with, isn't staying alive with, isn't staying creative with. And so after a while it just really sort of doesn't seem to be working, and but being a loyal order member and a sincere practitioner, you keep on doing it, so you trudge on. And the result is that, eventually you decide that the six-element practice doesn't work, or certainly doesn't work for you. All because you weren't sensitive to, this beautiful, delicate, your mind's like a musical instrument. It's something wonderful and delicate, and you need to sort of play it, with a sort of lightness and a sensitivity and a feeling for it and a touch. Really sensitive to what it needs right now. So there will be times where, even after you've been practicing for years, going through those reflections carefully will really help, particularly if your mind's got a bit kind of vague and lazy and dreamy. It just gives it something to sharpen it up. Yeah. But we need to be really appropriate with what's going on. Yeah. We need to have a sense of where the practice is trying to take us to and what helps us to get there now in this practice. Yeah. And always be doing that. So there's a, yeah. One extreme is that we just keep ourselves constantly amused by doing it different all the time and never really, so it never really quite bites because we keep, you know, finding another thing to dance around it with. So it needs to, the practice needs to be to have a steadiness to it. But then we also need to be curious. We need to be curious about how things are, but we also need to be curious about what will work now and creative in how we go about the practice. And appropriate, really appropriate to, yeah, the currents of our emotions and our energy and our understanding now. Yeah. And in that way, the practice deepens and we'll find more interest and more engagement and it will gain momentum. I think one of the great tragedies of spiritual life is that we take all these fantastic practices, you know, any one of which could probably take us to enlightenment, and we kill them. We absolutely murder them. You know, we wring the life out of them. Usually, I mean, there's different ways we can do it, but, you know, the favourite one is just to keep doing it, you know, in exactly this way, regardless of our state, yeah, without any of that sort of sensitivity to ourselves. Yeah. So yeah, let's not do that. Let's just not do it. Right, I'm starting to go on a bit. Maybe it's, yeah, let's do some practice before I go any further. Draw an arbitrary line under things there. Okay, I think we're going to do a short practice with maybe with the breathing. So, once again, to start with, just letting mind and body rest. All we have to do is be aware. Again, bringing awareness to the ground. As if we're putting down roots. Imagine or feel your energy and awareness going down into the earth. Really stable, unshakable. And then letting the body rise up. If the body is poised between earth and sky, stable and relaxed, aware and alive. Again, bringing awareness into the body, a kindly receptive awareness, what do we notice? And what would appreciate our attention? just as if we were listening to another person, giving the feelings and sensations our full attention, open and receptive. As they arise and pass away, let's bring that open, sensitive awareness to the breathing, particularly. Now with each in-breath, we could have a sense that as we breathe in, we're taking life right in. Really open. Open to life. Not just in our own protective bubble, really receiving life. with each out-breath, sense of letting go into life, not holding back, not holding on. So with the in-breath, we let go of aversion. We take down the barricades and let life right in. Receive it as a gift. And with the out-breath, we let go of clinging. Let go of holding on. Just relax into how things are. how we let go of any effort trying to do anything